Hi, and welcome to another episode here at Supernatural Confessions Podcast, where it is a safe place for you to confess all your experiences, be it supernatural, myths, urban legends, superstitions, or even the unknowns. And as a team, we'll compile and feature your confessions on our platforms. You may reach out to us through our Facebook page or website. You just need to search supernaturalconfessions.com. And you are also invited to join us every Friday night on our Facebook Live, where Eugene, the founder of Supernatural Confessions, together with Sonia Kurana and I, host a weekly live show discussing all about the supernatural. And I'm Kim, your host for this podcast series. And now, let's get on to the confessions.
Is anyone here? What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
For this episode, we're gonna kick off with Iman Arisa's story. His story happened in a place that many Singaporeans had a great memories of. So here is the confession by Iman Arisa, narrated by Linda, entitled Zook Special Request.
This next story was written in the Supernatural Confessions private group, It Must Be the Hantu, by Iman Arisa. The story I'm about to tell happened almost a lifetime ago, when the Grand Dame of Singapore nightclubs, Zook, stood on Jiak Kim Street. As a teenager, I did some DJing. It was a great side hustle for a 16-year-old. I had even managed to win a couple of competitions. In fact, I was the youngest person to score an invite to play a set at Zook back then. Quite an achievement, really. Zook's management arranged for a guardian to keep a close eye on me, not only to keep me away from any trouble that could erupt, but to also ensure that not a single drop of alcohol touched my lips. Actually, booze is still something I've never really taken a liking to. It's just too bitter for my sensitive taste buds. Zook was a mecca for music and frenzied partying to the hods that passed through its illustrious doors. But the club took on a very different feel once the music died down and the last of the revelers left the premises. Anyone who has ever worked at Zook would most certainly vouch that the office and DJ console were the primary points in the building where lots of spectral activity took place. 4 days before my coveted two-hour set, I made my way to the club to carry out sound checks. I was the opening act before the main DJ was scheduled to take over at around midnight. Normally, guests played from 1 a.m, but I assumed, due to my age, they had made an exception. This suited me fine, though, as I really had no interest in playing to a drunk and therefore clueless crowd. I remember that day distinctly. Though I did not see anything outworldly, I sensed eyes boring into me as I filled out some paperwork in the Zook office. One of the people there noticed my uneasiness and remarked, in a feeble attempt to lighten the mood, it's only the resident ghost, okay? Say hi, okay? Everything felt so surreal. Once all the paperwork was done, someone showed me the DJ console and where all the equipment was stored. Being just a broke student back then, I could only afford a basic laptop. But remarkably, despite the technical limitations, I still managed to win. The manager at the time, an Ang Mo lady whose name I can't quite recall, took one look at my shoddy Windows laptop and decided it probably was not the best one to use for my very first set at one of the top clubs in the world. We headed to Sin Ling Square, where she purchased a fast-looking MacBook for me. A little overwhelmed by her kind gesture, I offered to work at Zook out too and continued to do so until my overseas study stint a little while later. This, of course, brings us to an obvious question. What's the MacBook got to do with the ghostly going-ons at the original Zook? The day of my set arrived. Everyone was so hyped up about the event, and I was on a complete high gleefully looking forward to showcasing my deft hand at the DJ console. The set began exactly as I had envisioned it, and I was completely immersed in blasting the playlist I had carefully curated. Suddenly, I felt a tap. Naturally, I turned around to see who was behind me, but there was no one there. My eyes scanned the dance floor. The MC was on the platform outside, and my guardian was daydreaming on a seat behind the booth. It was definitely just me in the booth. Whatever it was, it had bags of persistence. It kept tapping me in what I later realized was actually a desperate bid to get my attention. Eventually, the invisible entity blurted exactly what it wanted. "Play my song," it pleaded. My gut feeling told me that this was the same spirit I had encountered in the office 4 days before. It was then that I noticed that a 1980s title had mysteriously appeared on the playlist on my brand new MacBook amongst my cache of 1990s dance hits. The entity certainly had great hacking skills. I played the song in order to appease it and hoped it would no longer disrupt my set. Being 16, I just went with the flow and decided it was best not to question the phantom clubber. The event ended at about 4 a.m. and given the extortionate amounts you have to fork out for a taxi in the wee hours of the morning, I hung around and waited to catch the first bus home. As most of the staff were busy clearing up, they left me to lounge on the VIP sofa. It was then that I felt another tap again. I spun my head round, but nobody was in sight. Initially, I thought someone was playing tricks on me or I had accidentally drunk an alcohol-laced Coca-Cola. My thoughts were then interrupted by a soft, "Thank you," and my drowsy eyes spotted a shadow darting off. Looking back, I think I must have encountered the club's infamous resident ghost, whatever that ethereal being was. As those who have worked there have corroborated, it was pretty much harmless. I spoke to the manager who gifted me the MacBook and she just shrugged and said, "You've definitely met one of Zook's resident spirits. It's friendly, but also cheeky." In subsequent years, I had the privilege of playing more sets at Zook. And at each and every one of those times, I would feel the now familiar invisible tap and the urge to play the same 1980s tune. I think it was a song by Ace of Base, but I'm not completely sure. I only remember that it had a thumping bass. The Zook I played at is now, like much of the Singapore that I knew as a teenager, just a distant memory. The club has been given a futuristic lease of life in Clarke Quay, but I believe Zook's soul died the day it was torn from its original riverside home on Jiak Kim Street.
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions. If you have your own confessions to share, reach out to us on our Facebook or website, Supernatural Confessions. Remember, you are not alone. We thank Iman Arisa for the story earlier on. To continue, now I'm going to read out a compilation of confessions by Noor Aziza Shaim, also on our SC private group, It Must Be The Hunt Too, on Facebook. "Hi everybody, let me share a story about my dad's old workplace when I was younger. My dad used to work as a security officer at one of the club in Changi. Well, Changi is famous for its haunted stories as the place is very ulu, meaning to say the place is actually rather far away, and gives an eerie feeling whether during the night or the day. My uncle told me it is a place where people let go of their possession, or saka, and the land was badly tainted during the World War II Japanese era. So my dad would usually have his night shift, and every Saturday, we would all follow him to work and have a chill at the resort while he does his duty. That includes my mum, me and my three other siblings. What I am about to share with you are strange occurrences that happen on different occasions. And here I will label them story number 1, 2, 3, and so on. Story number 1, the guardhouse. Upon entrance to the resort, there is this guardhouse located beside the country. We will usually leave our bags, except for personal belongings, there at the guardhouse, then proceed to the resort. One day, my mum happened to leave one of her items there and told us to go and get it for her. So me and my eldest brother head to the guardhouse with a bulky torchlight. Once we arrived, we started searching and shone the torchlight around. Until suddenly, my brother just stopped and shivered as he stared at the window. He was also pointing his torchlight at it. I turned to look at the same direction, and to my horror, and to our naked eyes, we saw this pale-looking, naked lady with her back facing against us. She was fair, but pale. She just stood there right outside the window panel. It took us a few seconds to process the whole thing in our brain. And then we started running to our parents. It felt like the longest run in our life. And that was our first ever encounter. Story number 2, the jetty. My dad would usually have his friends over for fishing at the jetty. Sometimes I would follow him to the jetty and just sit on the boat while they fish. There was this one time where I was on the jetty, enjoying the breeze of night wind. Then I decided to look down at the sea. As I was looking down at it, I saw some fishes swimming around in it. But there is this one particular fish that seems to be much clearer in sight than the rest. And it was in white. It was not actually getting clearer, but it was as if something was emerging from the water. Then it dawned on me that this is definitely not a fish, as this particular thing is getting bigger and bigger as it comes up. So much that it looked like a white log. And to my horror, it was actually a shrouded entity, or in the Malay community, we call it pocong. All I remember afterwards was, I was in slow motion. I somehow froze, yet I wanted to run away. I managed to call for my dad, and they didn't hang around much after I broke the news to them. Story number 3, the headless ghost. When we were at the resort, our favorite activity is to swim in their pool. What more can a kid be excited at 12 a.m.? It was always the pool. We would usually swim from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. or till our fingers are all wrinklish. I remember one night, while we were in the pool, my youngest brother came running from the entrance of the jetty towards us, and he looked pale. As he started in fear, saying that he saw my dad, but he was headless. So he told us that while we were playing by the pool, he happened to saw my dad walking past the pool, going towards the jetty. He then called for my dad, but he didn't respond. He thought maybe our dad couldn't hear him amidst the noise by the pool. He then ran towards him. It was there that he saw our dad stopping by the hut beside the jetty and slowly turned around to look at him, and he was headless. My brother was a few steps away from the entity, froze in his tracks, and then came running to us. We were all kind of stumped, as we didn't expect it to happen within a short range of distance from the pool. We then pick up for the night. Story 4, the sad looking boy. I remember being in my teens when this happened, and it was during Hari Raya Haji. We decided to spend the holiday with our aunties, uncles and cousins to go fishing and spending the night nearby to my dad's workplace. So we pitched tents. My uncles recce the area to make sure that the spot that we have are clear of any entity spots. I remember them putting some coconuts nearby some tree, as they mentioned that it is a graveyard tree. So they did like a barrier with some coconuts, if I remember it clearly. My mum and my youngest brother are resting opposite the graveyard tree, facing it directly. It was suddenly that my brother randomly told my mum, Mama, you see that boy by the tree? He looks so sad, and it's a pity looking at him like that. We all froze upon hearing that, and we quickly turned his direction someplace else. And story number 5, Let Grandma. This is a continuation to story number 4. We brought our grandma along. I still remember how badly she wants to go home. I think she just felt uneasy about the place. It was after much negotiation that we managed to get her to agree to stay with us for the night, and we brought her to the library in the resort for a rest instead of the tent area. Although this story is in my head, but somehow I forgot the timing it happened. All I remember next was, while resting in the library, my grandma was gone. She was nowhere to be found. We all panicked and searched high and low for her at the resort, fearing that she might drown herself in the pool or by the sea or hurt herself somewhere else. It came to a point that we called the police for help. And the next thing we knew, the police found her. They found her walking aimlessly by the road around Changi with no shoes and disheveled hair. It's quite puzzling for us to know that she walked quite a mile away, when in actual fact, she needs to have support in walking. It was then my uncle said it must have been the influence of the resort or an entity that led her out. We're still not sure how it came to that, and it remains a mystery up till today. These are some of that I could remember. And with that, we thank Nur Aziza Shaim for the stories. You are listening to Supernatural Confessions. Whatever you don't see, doesn't mean it is not there.
At Niue, there's a very, very, very nice country club resort, very near to the airport. We drove the whole day, so we're very tired, and we thought maybe we can get some sleep there. And so we checked in, they give us a room. It was like, you know, the very kampong hut like that, very cute one, right? It's very cute. The resort is very cute. And as we were walking, I start to see trees, you know, your favorite tree is there, which is the banana tree. So banana tree was there, and the banana tree was like shaking and everything. So I was like, okay, it could be the wind, it's okay. We didn't get a separate room, so they actually said, oh, there's actually a family master room and the small room for the kids. So I said, I stay in the kid room, you stay in the master room. Okay, sweet. So I went in and I felt very uneasy lah. Like, you know, the banana tree keep hitting my window. I don't like it. And I was at that point, like, I was actually, it was my time of the month also. So I was feeling very uneasy. So I actually creep into the bed with my parents. I said, Mapa, can I sleep with you tonight, please? Like, you know, like, I don't get to see daddy often. Then, you know, like, we should be all together. You know, I make a bogus story. So my dad's like, okay, nah, you're very annoying. Fine, you know. So I went to sleep in a bit. And as soon as I go out of my room, my dad's and mom's room, the window, the glass panel got knocked. Like, quite a few times. Like, it's like, you know, like, storm kind of weather and the trees keep shaking and hitting the wall, exactly like that. So I told my dad, I said, you know, I don't feel very good, you know. And my dad said, no, just sleep it out. It might be because you're very tired from the trip. I said, okay. Then I tried to sleep, and in the morning, like, I suddenly woke up around 3. All this happened at 3 o'clock, but I don't know why. So I woke up at 3 o'clock. What happened was I actually saw the lady at the foot of my bed. She actually didn't like the fact that there are people around that area, because that's her area. I was like, okay, never mind. You know, we're leaving in the morning. We'll leave. As soon as we wake up, we're going to pack up and leave. So please do not harm us. what I saw was the thing that she was staring at was not us, but she was actually looking at my mom's mantra book. She was not happy because I remember that before my mom went to sleep, she was actually doing prayers. And the mantra book actually, like, you know, we have this Buddha mantra where they actually whack the spirit until it really burns them to eternal hell. My mom was actually chanting that particular verse, and I think it really calmed the lady. I seem to make her understand that we are not there to disturb her. She then went into the bathroom and she never came out again. And next morning, I told my mom, I didn't even dare to use the bathroom, okay, because she went inside there.
And that is Kate with her confession. So what do you think about the lady that she saw? And in our Friday live session, we did actually talk about this. And I remember saying that sometimes the mantra chanted by the Buddhists, it doesn't necessarily chase these things away. Sometimes it is to help them too. Could it explain why she is there? Thank you very much, Kate, for your story.
If you like the content here on the podcast, you are also invited to join Eugene and Kim at Supernatural Confessions Facebook page every Friday 10 p.m. Malaysia and Singapore time, where they will discuss, dissect, and go deeper in details on your confession. And I'll be waiting for you there.
So the next story that I picked up from our group, SC Private Group, It Must Be the Hunter on Facebook, it's another story that is related to mantra. And this story, it's by Nicholas Lim. He started his confession with, "Hey guys, so I just wanted to share one of the experiences that made me reconsider not everything is explainable with science and reason. So this happened when I was in my third year of university. My family is not well off, so I have to come up with most, if not all, of the expenses, such as tuition and day-to-day expenses. As such, to commute to school and to have a date with now my ex-girlfriend, I decided to buy a second-hand car, a Nissan Sunny 130Y. To most of the people in the generation before me, I believe you'd be familiar with the car model. I heard it was a lit car back then. Considering the age of the car, the reliability is not too bad, as I do regular maintenance myself and replace broken parts through an experienced mechanic. Anyhow, one night at 2 a.m, I was driving back to my hostel from my ex-rented double story when suddenly the car ran out of fuel beside a mosque. For illustration purposes, the road I was on is somewhat of a highway, albeit the environment being not as developed as major areas or cities. Being prepared, I have an oil canister in my car, and I plan to walk the 1 or 2 kilometers to the nearest gas station. The idea does not sound good at the time. It was 2 a.m. in the morning. But the thought of being stranded on the side of the road in an underdeveloped area seems to be worse. Being 2 a.m. in the morning, the whole walk to the gas station is quiet. As mentioned before, the university's area I was in was not as developed as areas like Johor Bahru or Penang, so the streets are pretty much empty. Halfway through, I was walking past a land full of dead trees. It was weird to me because the highway has street lamps and there is moonlight, but the land was very dark, to the point where you can't really see what's behind those trees. I remember thinking to myself, there are no leaves on the trees. why is it so dark? It is at this point where my perspective on the unexplainable changes. While I was going past the piece of land, I heard someone shouting my nickname from behind. Being a non-believer at that time, I turned my head back as a response. I've heard a lot of warnings or advice that when someone calls you in the middle of the night, do not respond and just keep walking. I forgot about it that time. As I turned my head back, I obviously saw no one there, not even a car or a motorcycle. Chalking it up to just me mishearing things, I turned my head back when all of a sudden something tried to trip me. Fortunately, I had a good balance, so all I got is losing a bit of footing, but luckily I did not fall face down. After getting tripped, however, the street lamp suddenly flickered out. At this point, I was spooked as hell, and I picked up my pace to try and get over the area. The street light did turn back on after I went through the area. There were definitely chills, and I was pretty spooked, but I made it to the gas station. Maybe something similar happened to others, because as I asked the cashier to set me up for the gas canister, they smiled and said no more. After refilling the gas, I had to walk the same route back to my car. Thinking about the previous experience, I tried my best to pluck up my courage and walk past that particular lane. At that moment, the light from the street lamps flickered out again and only came back on once I fully went past. Surprisingly though, the journey back to the car feels shorter. Anyway, after filling up my car with gas, I tried to start it, but the engine seemed like it does not want to turn on. Desperate to leave at that time, I said a little mantra that I know and hoped for the car to start. After a few tries, the car rolled back to life and I drove back to my hostel like a bat out of the cave. Definitely changed my mindset too, just because you can't see it doesn't mean that it definitely does not exist after this experience. Thank you very much, Nicholas Lim, for the story. Like we always say here on the show, whatever you don't see doesn't mean it is not there. You are listening to Supernatural Confessions. If you have your own confessions to share, reach out to us on our Facebook or website, Supernatural Confessions. Remember, you are not alone. The last confession for this episode will come from David Lee. Because while I was recording this episode, from a clear weather outside, suddenly it was pouring heavily. Hence, I decided to search for a story in the Facebook group that has relation to the bad weather. Hence, I found David's confession. It started like this. Location: Tanah Merah, restricted area. I remember when I was 19 years old, I was tasked to be the upper study for the new NSFs. I had to ensure that they know their patrol route well before they can do it on their own with their canine buddy. Normally, we do it in pairs. This patrol route is near to the Changi Women's Prison. At times, we can hear them marching and singing. This route that we are supposed to patrol aren't well lighted and has minimum lights from 12 a.m. onwards. We're supposed to go on patrol at 12 a.m. and 4 a.m. On one particular night, it was drizzling, hence we'll need to cancel the patrol and it starts to become Cat 1, meaning thunderstorm. Well, before I go in depth, a little background of myself. Since young for me, I can sense the unknown presence, said David. From me being an outdoor camp instructor till now, I've encountered many incidents, which I cannot justify with science and studies up to this date. I'm not afraid, because I know if your conscience are clear, there's nothing you should be afraid of. Back to the story. That night was raining unusually heavy. With very, very cold and heavy to breathe in atmosphere. Coincidentally, our canine buddy we brought in for patrol that night had been whining away more frequently than usual. It didn't bother us as much because it is also common for the canine to whine as they are guard dogs and has to be kept in huge cage. That night at 3 a.m, I was hungry, so I went to get some food. I went to the control room to take a look at the CCTV after preparing my food, and I noticed a really bright orb that sped through the 8 screens. We have 4 on top and 4 below. At first, I thought it was just some technical issues, hence I didn't bother. But when I walk out of the control room and look out of the window, there's this lady directly standing outside of our bunk window. I was shocked because I was able to see her. The moment I turned my head, she vanished. I knew something was not right because that night when I slept, I dreamt of her being abused and was killed. Her organs was emptied. Well, in my dream, she wasn't wearing red at all. She was wearing a white dress. I guess that is how we explain why her dress was in red and not white. After that, I was sent back to the base and I didn't see her ever since. But I still can feel her presence up on the trees surrounding the bunk. I know she meant no harm and I didn't share it with any NSFs to prevent them getting scared. For those that didn't know, think deeper. What other possibility could have made her dress red when her internal organs were empty? That's all for my experience, and thank you. Thank you as well to David. We have come to the end of this episode of Supernatural Confessions. If you have enjoyed this episode, please rate us with a 5-star review on whichever platform you are streaming this podcast on. Go on and tell your friends and family about us. You can find more of our content on YouTube, Facebook, and our website. Search for keyword Supernatural Confessions. If you or someone you know have a confession to make, visit supernaturalconfessions.com. You can send it in text, voice memo, or even video format. Let us know if you want your identity to be kept secret. Supernatural Confessions is created by Eugene Tay. Until the next episode, my name is Kim, your host for this podcast series, signing off with, whatever you don't see doesn't mean it is not there.